it's terrible to be following Michael Rosen. Anyway, my story takes place in Wales, but you'll be relieved to know I'm not going to attempt a Welsh accent. You'll just have to imagine that. My story is called Ben and Lily Maud. She was 16, although the wedding certificate stated 20. "There's been a lot of lies," he said. "I'll be 70 in any minute," she replied. She first saw him propping up the wall of Blenaffen Workman's Hall, alongside his brother, Hewell. Over the head of the boy from the quarry, who barely reached her shoulder, she noted his full lips, thoughtful eyes. "You could make something of me," she thought, as she danced past him. Dipping and twirling, she'd been careful to reveal a brief glimpse of ankle beneath a thick black stocking. Despite being big, she knew she was light on her feet. "Want to have a dance, then?" He was obviously not prepared for it. "I don't," he mumbled. "Dance, that is." "Everybody dances," she told him. As she led him to the floor, she heard his brother Hewell give a low whistle. "She's a fast one." That was the start of it. "Why can't I get enough of you?" he'd groan as they lay glued together on the side of Blorenge Mountain. Looking back, she realized there was indeed a place inside her he'd never quite reached. He was from Pont Newydd. Blenavon girls were different, that's what he told her. Better turned out, more lively perhaps. He couldn't put his finger on it. She'd not met anyone like him, who talked like him, who read books. Lying in bed next to her mam and brothers, listening to the rain clattering on the tin roof of the scullery, she told herself it couldn't last. He was a virgin when they met. He was surprised that she was too. "What did you think then?" she asked. "That I'd been putting myself about up and down the mountain?" She knew her coarseness excited him. "Who are you?" he said. His mother and sister seemed to be wondering the same. "Ben's not going to be down the mines forever," his mother said when he took her home to tea. "I've never been to Pont Newydd before," Lily Maud replied. "Thanks for inviting me." "So they want you to be a teacher," she whispered next to his ear as they lay in one of the sheds of the old ironworks. "It's not a question of what they want," he told her. "I'm making up my own mind." She sensed he wasn't good at that, making up his mind. She knew he hated being underground, hated the sweat and damp and stench of it, the smell of coal dust he could never quite be rid of. "I don't know why our mam washes those old singlets every day. She might as well just wipe off the dirt. I tell her they'll be the same tomorrow." "Do you think of me when you're hacking away at one of them old seams down Big Pit?" she asked him as he took the pins out of her hair, carefully, one by one. "Never," he replied. She knew he was lying. Unsure of almost everything, she was confident in her tall, angular body, her strong arms and soft, silky skin. Only the skin on her hands, roughened by work at the brick foundry, she knew let her down. "There's a war coming. Will you fight for me, Ben Gwillem?" His brother Hewell could barely contain himself. "They're celebrating down Newport. Let's join up." Ben was less enthusiastic. "Why should we fight for the English? Let them do their own dirty work." Hewell wasn't surprised. "Our Ben hates violence. He's always the first to leave the pub or the pit head at the same sign of a fight," he told Lily Maud. "I tell him they'll think you're soft, boyo." "Not like you then," said Lily Maud. "I want to see some life," Hewell told her. They walked over the mountain to the fair at Clonethlin and rode the merry-go-round, Ben behind, his arms around her waist, holding her securely. Later, they lay on the grass, eating barra brith. He told her of Gruffydd ap Llywelyn, who 1,000 years before had united Wales. "You'll make a good teacher," she told him. At Easter, he gave her a marquisite hatpin in the shape of a bird. "That's what you remind me of," he told her, "a big, beautiful bird." They were sitting on the steps of the Miners' Institute. "There's quiet you are," he said. "I'm up the bloody spout, aren't I?" she replied. He stared at her with blank eyes, as if forcing his mind not to understand. "Why do you always talk like that?" He walked off and left her sitting there. She didn't see him for a week. On Sunday, she took the omnibus to Pont Newydd and wandered around outside the chapel. She met his sister coming out. "Ben's down Newport with Hewell," she said. "They've gone to enlist." Her face was accusing. "There's pale as putty you are." Her man was forever watching out for meningitis. Her sister had died of it when Lily Maud was 12. She'd left school to take care of the boys. After that, there was no more education. He was waiting for her halfway down the mountain when she came out of the foundry. A little apart from the other girls, she strode past him without a glance. She knew it wasn't meningitis. And late one night, making her way up the communal backyard to the lavatories, feeling the sticky wetness between her legs, she knew it wasn't a baby either. He turned up at the door and was shown into the front room. Miss Ramsden, the lodger who lived and slept there and spent most evenings talking to the furniture, was turfed out and sent off to the Band of Hope temperance meeting with a couple of neighbours. "Please come into the parlour," said her man. She got the best cups down from the dresser. Ben traced Lily Maud's arm with his finger and ran his hand gently over her stomach. "I needed time to think," he said. "That's your problem, Ben Gwillam," she told him. "You think too much." That night she couldn't sleep. She got up quietly, poured a cup of milk, and sat drinking it by the cold stove. So it was going to happen. She was going to marry a teacher. She wore the same white muslin dress her mam had worn. It was a bit tight and a bit too short, but as she signed the register in Baptist Hall, she saw her mother's eyes well with tears of pride, and what Lily Maud knew were bitter memories. Ben's own mother had taken to her bed with the grip. His sister barely spoke to Lily Maud. Only Hewell, jovial as ever, infused a sense of occasion. "He's got himself a proper Lily of the Valley," he announced as he hugged the bride. They lay entwined in the big brass bed in the room that was kept for visitors. One floor below, Miss Ramsden was talking loudly to a chest of drawers. "Have a chip and go away." Ben put his hand over Lily Maud's mouth before her raucous laugh could shake the house. He told her he didn't care about the lies. "You're mine now," he said. "Now we'll really know each other." She got a letter from the training camp in Nottingham. They were billeted out with landladies who scrimped on food, soap, and lavatory paper. He hated bayonet practice. He could just about see firing a rifle, but not sticking something sharp into a person. Hewell was the life and soul. She never did get to Nottingham. She'd been looking forward to it. She'd only been out of the Breckens once, and that was a day trip to Barry Island. She was sewing a dress to travel in, cut down from some old bedroom curtains, when his sister came round. She wouldn't sit down. "They've gone," she said, handing Lily Maud the letter. "Dear ma'am, our Hewell's not the only one disappointed. Everyone was hoping for France. Nobody knows where in the world Belgium is. I've got a map, though. If I'm going to fight, at least I want to know where that fight is. Tell our Lil, I'll write when I'm able." Girls were flocking to the new munitions factory in Ponty. Her mother wouldn't hear of it. "You stop where you are. I'm not having you hanging about here without proper work. Guns would be of no use in a few months. People always needed bricks." Lying in bed with her mother and brothers, everyone snoring, she struggled to remember she was a married woman. She wrote him a letter. It took all day. She kept wanting to change it so he would know the ache inside her. She saw him before he saw her. She watched as he slung the kit bag over his shoulder and made his way slowly along the platform. He seemed smaller than she remembered. "It's only for a week," he told her. Lying in the big brass bed, her head on his shoulder, her leg across his stomach, "Talk to me," she pleaded. Instead, he took her in silence, swiftly and violently. He insisted on leaving the candle burning. He strode across Bronange Mountain. "What's it like?" she asked. "Mucky," he finally said. "I'm freezing." He walked so fast she had trouble keeping up. In bed, she asked if he killed anyone. He was silent for a long time. "You hear a scream, and it could be the Hun, or one of ours, or even an animal caught in a trap. You don't know, and you don't care. You just fire." He went to sleep with his back towards her. As she saw him off at Ponty, she realized he hadn't once kissed her. Hewell, too, looked different. The skin under his eyes was greyish-brown, like withered rhododendrons. "I lost track of our Ben until Victoria Station," he said. "All that time, and we had to meet going in opposite directions." He gave her a piece of paper, folded small. Opening it, she saw it was a serviette from the station cafeteria. On it, Ben had written, "Sorry." "Come on, girl," Hewell urged as she wiped her eyes. "We've got to keep smiling." She sat on the steps of the Miners' Institute with Hewell on his last night. "It's the waiting that's the worst," he told her. He told her about the boy in his trench who couldn't stop vomiting. He thought it was the rats running over his face at night. He said they'd turned his stomach. Hewell said he didn't mind the rats. It was the stench coming from the boy's boot he'd found unbearable. "I tried to get him to take it off. Of all the terrible smells in that trench, that was the worst." The boy couldn't contemplate the consequence of taking off his boot. "Things would be better at the front," Hewell told her. He'd just heard his battalion was joining Ben's. "We'll finally both be doing something." She made the appointment by letter. A girl at the foundry gave her directions. She was early enough to walk around the streets. The air in Abergavenny was untainted by smoke or dust, and there was a fresh breeze. Rows of cared-for houses, no doubt with indoor toilets. Despite the times, the shops had things you wanted to buy. The door of the hat shop made a jangling sound as she went in. She tried on a hat with a blue veil. An assistant took her into the back room, where a woman in a flowered pinafore was washing her hands. "So you don't want the babby?" She said it flatly, without looking up. "My husband's got killed in the war," Lily Maud replied. "They're giving him a medal." Later, unable to bear it, she'd cried out in pain. "Don't be such a babby," the woman said. Then she laughed. "Just a little joke." She put the telegram down on the table. Since her mam couldn't read, there was nothing for it but to open it. She thought it was punishment for all the lies. His mother and sister were sitting in the kitchen with the curtains closed. "It's all right," she told them. "Ben's in hospital in France. They're sending him back to Newport." His sister looked at her with dislike. "Hewell's killed," she said. She sat by him all day and most of the night, listening to the groans from the other beds. Ben only opened his eyes once. He talked to the ceiling, something about a leg. The nurse told her the leg wound wasn't serious. It was the fever that had made him delirious. He was well enough to sit up and have a cup of tea. Finally, needing to talk, he took hold of her sleeve. "He wouldn't come, you see. I kept telling him we've got to move, but it's like he was frozen." His thin fingers tightened on her sleeve, hurting her wrist. "There was no choice. I had to run." She looked out of the window. A woman was pushing a young boy in a wheelchair towards some flower beds. I went back, though. I found him still sitting there, staring. I closed his eyes. Well, the one that was left. She felt as though she was swimming underwater, something she'd always wanted to do since that long-ago day in Barry. And I picked up the leg. I was sure it was his. I was going to bury it, see, for our mum. But I don't know what happened to it. I think I must have lost it. The nurse gave her his belongings. There wasn't much. The cigarette case she'd given him for his birthday. A photo they'd had taken at Clanethlin Fair. She fingered the cheap leather of the wallet. It wasn't Ben's. There was congealed blood on it. Inside was Hewell's Boys Brigade passing out badge, wrapped in newspaper and perfectly preserved. Along with a badly creased photo of his mother and sister, there was a piece of paper, carefully folded. She recognized it at once. "My very dearest Hugh, what we'd done was terrible. I love Ben, as you very well know, but you made me laugh. I felt warm again. When this is over, we ought to forget that. I'm going to try, but don't think I can, dearest Hugh." She screwed up the paper into a ball and rammed it into the pocket of her coat. They walked out of the hospital arm in arm, leaning on each other. "They say it's all right," she said. "Tell me it's all right." But he couldn't. "We'll soon get back," she said. It was a lovely spring morning. They ate faggots and peas on Newport Station. When the war ended, Ben went back down the mines. There was nothing so good as finally cracking through a seam, he told her, breaking its back. There was no more talk of teaching. "I'm sick of bloody books," he said. "What's the use of any of it?" They rented a cottage up near the tip. The siren from the pit rattled all the plates on the dresser, and the washing on the line was always speckled with coal dust, but she didn't care. It was her house. She was a married woman, even if he seldom touched her. The accident happened in the early evening when the men were making their way back towards the shaft. 20 died. Another 9 were finally dug out alive. Ben was one of the lucky ones, and everyone said it was a miracle. And what a lovely job the surgeon had done, considering he'd had half a ton of coal fall on his face. He was back in Newport Hospital for 3 months, and after that, he didn't leave the house much. He spent a lot of time sitting in the horsehair chair by the stove, and he left his new teeth, which had been specially made to fit his new jaw, lying in a Jubilee Memorial tea caddy on the dresser all day. And when they got the compensation, Lily Maud went to Abergavenny and bought all new shoes and dresses and a hat with a veil.